The Mace Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Amateurism is dead. I'm thinking of those scenes from those movies or television shows where the heart monitor starts, you know, beep, beep, beep. That's how I feel about amateurism. After a federal judge approved terms of a sprawling, according to the Associated Press, $2.8 billion antitrust settlement that will upend the way college sports have been run for more than a century. In short, schools can now directly pay players through licensing deals, a concept that goes against the foundation of amateurism that college sports was built upon. So here are the nuts and bolts. Starting July 1st, each school will be allowed, but not required, to spend roughly $20.5 million in new payments to their athletes. That figure comes from a negotiated formula that caps athlete payments at 22% of the average annual revenue that FBS-level schools get from ticket sales, broadcast rights, and other items. The cap will grow on a regular basis during the 10-year lifespan of the settlement as the school's revenue expands and via scheduled incremental increases. A sports economist who was a subject matter expert and used in the settlement process wrote that he expects it will grow to more than $30 million per year by the time the deal expires. And I was reading a story, gentlemen, in The Athletic, written by Justin Williams, with the headline, "What I'm Hearing About NCAA Revenue Sharing, $40 million Football Rosters, and Unintended Consequences." It's a really good read. A lot of sources from around the world of college football and college athletics. But there was a particular section that stuck out to me. And I'm wondering if we could begin to see tanking in college sports. So this is what Justin Williams at The Athletic wrote, quote, "Unlike in the NFL, where there is a rookie salary scale and fairly transparent free agency, college football teams are still navigating best roster building practices. How much money do you set aside for high school recruits? For transfers, which positions do you value most in your particular system? How should you structure a player's payments? This could lead to more GM hires in the mold of Andrew Luck or pro-style executives who have administrative power over head coaches and can maintain philosophies across coaching changes. Further complicating matters is the fact that the settlement and revenue share calendars operate on the academic fiscal calendar, which runs July to June. This means each football season is split across two separate rev share budgets. One personnel director was quoted as saying, if you spend all $15 million on players for the 2025 season, then you aren't going to be able to pay anyone for the 2026 season until July 1st, 2026. This will require thoughtful budgeting and could spark some innovative approaches, some more palatable than others. Tanking has been an issue unique to professional sports, but revenue sharing could usher it into the college ranks. If a team has glaring roster holes at quarterback or other key positions, it could elect to save its revenue share money and go all in on the transfer portal when the season ends with a bigger war chest than most of its competitors."
Well, I mean, yes, I still get that, but that doesn't take into account the deals that players can get aside from name, image, and likeness. That the 20.5 per university program will get. So I understand saying, you know what, this quarterback is coming out, you know, possibly he would transfer next year considering what they have, you know, who they recruited. So that guy more than likely will be transferring. Yes, he's a, you know, fourth year guy going into his fourth year. He's played some really good football. So we don't want to pay this person as much, so we're going to save it for next year for this guy. I get that, man, but I think, I don't want to get used to tanking. I don't want to get used to any way you can facilitate tanking. No way whatsoever. So I still think it's going to be, teams will try it, I'm sure. But again, it's just like anything else. Like, you may tank, but you may not be the guy that's getting that recruit the next following year from the portal. So, again, it's just like the NFL. Yeah, you can tank if you want to, but you may not be the guy that's reaping the rewards the next following season. So, unless you got this ironclad, you know, contract, or you've built up enough equity that, you know, universities or 80s are going to give you another shot. But more than likely, if you're tanking, then are you going to have a job next year to even reap the rewards of tanking?
What are your thoughts, Willie?
You know, I'm not worried about the tanking. I think at some point that will take care of itself. I don't think it's going to be a strategy that will work. Maybe you spend a little less 1 year and a little more the next year, but tanking, to me, is a totally different thing. So I think we're putting the cart before the horse. Here's what I think about this system. It's got some sound things. I like how it's trying to share the pie, try to create some semblance of competitive balance, and also transparency on what everybody's getting, right? What are the players getting? How does what Derek is making with NIL compare to what Adam's making? You know, they're two different guys. I want some comparables. I'm trying to figure out what to pay my guys. We've got revenue sharing. I think these are good things. But you mentioned the word system, this new system. That assumes that everybody's playing by the system. Mm-hmm. It is an SEC tradition to go around the system, right, and outspend everybody, find ways to do it. So I think people will get creative and go outside of the parameters of this system to try to gain a competitive advantage. Well, I think that goes without saying, right?
They're telling you right now that there's the NIL, but that's separate from, you know, what a booster can pay you on the outside. That's not a part of we've negotiated, well, whatever, whoever the we is, negotiated that $20.5 billion would be the salary cap. But that's not including, you know, Willie that's, you know, a billionaire and he wants to give away an extra million or two to this upcoming recruit that's coming out. Regardless if you save your money or not, if I got a big, deep pocket person, I can outbid you.
According to the Associated Press, under terms of the settlement, third parties are still allowed to cut deals with the players. Some call it a workaround, but most simply view this as the new reality in college sports as schools fight to land top talent and then keep them on campus. Top quarterbacks are reportedly getting paid around $2 million a year, which would eat up about 10% of a typical school's NIL budget for all its athletes.
Yeah, so that's
your strategy. Yeah. That's a good example, right? Let's say you're Ohio State. Let's just pick one that was rumored to have the highest payroll. And you've got your $20 million, right, that everybody else. But you're saying, I mean, you could. I guess it's semantics because you're going to have whatever you need probably on top of the $20 million. But on one hand, you could say, I'm going to use my $20 million on my roster except for the quarterback. And then I'm going to have my quarterback fund outside of that with the collective or whatever outside resources that you have, and they are bountiful resources. You see what I'm saying? Like the rich, the deep pockets are still going to have an advantage here. I think what it does though, it sounds to me like a little Major League Baseball, where it's a little better for the middle to lower tier of some of these leagues, where they feel like they've got enough that if they're smart about it. And I would put Vanderbilt in this. I would put the Wake Forest, the Northwesterns, maybe some of the Big 12 schools that maybe don't have quite the resources of a Big 10 or an SEC. But if you've got enough and you're smart with your GM, you've got a well that you can go to at least be good. So like you're like the Rays. You're like the Brewers. You're like a small market team in Major League Baseball that knows they can't outspend the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Dodgers. But if they're smart, they can still have some good teams.
I found this to be interesting because this is going to separate the haves and the have-nots, right? Mm-hmm. the high rollers, the premier programs that expect to win national championships, they'll be spending as much money as they humanly can. I thought this was interesting from the Athletic story. Quote, most schools are leaning on fundraising and seeking new or increased assistance from campus subsidies or student fees. Virginia Tech, for example, recently announced it will increase student fees and direct a larger portion to athletics to help fund revenue sharing, a path plenty of other schools are considering, including Tennessee, right? Tennessee has an athletic fee on tickets, I believe, like an extra surcharge.
Oh, yeah.
Iowa State Athletic Director Jamie Pollard referenced as much in a recent interview while noting that Cyclones Athletics received no financial subsidies from the university. This was Jamie Pollard quote. Iowa State does not have that additional $20 million. But if we don't pay it for this coming year, we have big problems, right? So we're going to pay it. Would you pay a bigger fee as a student to go to school here so that a member of our men's basketball team could get paid $1.5 million in addition to their scholarship, their room and board, and all the services they get for being a student on campus? That's the fundamental question we're going to have to ask ourselves. Because if we don't do that, then what we're saying is that we're not going to have the athletic program that we're having.
I can tell you right now, those kids are going to be like, no, I don't want to have to pay that. Pay them. I could pay an extra fee. And listen, I don't blame them. I get it. Because as a parent, it's like, I don't want to have to pay an extra fee, you know, in order to pay the athlete, whether it be football, basketball, or baseball. My kid isn't playing those sports. My kid is doing something totally different. So why should I, you know, have to pay that increase, whatever it is?
So, Willie, Clemson introduced last year, this story from October of 2024, an athletic fee of $150 per semester for students starting, I guess, well, actually, this upcoming academic year. The fee is expected to raise between $7 million and $8 million for the athletic department in 2025-2026. The school had long resisted such fees and has not charged its students for single game available tickets to athletic events. But every student at Clemson will have to pay $150 per semester for athletic fees.
It's going to keep going up,
too. I guess the
too.
Thinking is, I think the thinking is, will they even notice on their bill?
Right.
You know, an extra 150. But I can see somebody like Adam going down the freshman hall and knocking on the door of the freshman football player and said, I'm paying your salary. I'm paying your NIL. You better play well on Saturday. You know, like that, because they would be right. Every student could do that.
But see, that's what I don't like, and for this reason, because now. It's essentially pro football or pro basketball or pro whatever it is, because now it's in the pros, a fan can heckle and say, we pay your salary. And okay, yeah, you come to the games, I get it. But really, television companies pay our, you know, they pay the salary, but it's because of y'all that are watching it that they're paying it. So I get it. It's all full circle. I get it. Now it goes to the college student. You walking down the street, I pay your salary. You see what I'm saying? Do y'all understand what I'm saying?
That's what they've chosen to do.
Exactly. And it's not like, that's the part, like, I don't think you should charge the student body an extra $125. They may not notice it. I get it. But there are some kids and families that are going to say, yeah, I noticed that money. Okay. All right, then. So my thing is, I wouldn't, like, let kids just, let them pay for their tuition, room and board. You know, if they're going to a particular, school within the university, like, you know, med school, something, that's what they're paying for. They're not paying to go watch the football team or the basketball team or the baseball team. That should have been rolled in already. I shouldn't have to pay extra just to give them money when y'all making billions of dollars.
I'll tell you what I would do. I would buy $150 worth of pizza on the freshman football player's credit card down the hall. That's what I would do, because that almost happened, actually, not with a football player, because my university did not have a football team. But I did have a neighbor who used to shout into the telephone, because you had the paper-thin walls in the dorms, right? And no matter how many times I told him, man, you got to lower your voice. I can hear all of your phone conversations. Nice guy. Never heeded my advice. So one day he was ordering pizza and he read his credit card number over the phone. So I happened to be at my desk. So I wrote down his credit card number. Then I went knock next door with a sticky note. This your credit card number? You don't lower your voice. I'm ordering pizza for the whole dorm next time. And I never heard a peep out of him again.
But see, I don't want to have it. When that starts to happen.
The student athletes, quote unquote, student athletes.
It's no longer.
Well, yes. But they're under an immense amount of pressure at these schools.
Anyway.
Right? So now that some schools may say, as you said, Derek, I'm helping pay your salary.
Exactly.
Like, that adds a different wrinkle to this as well.
So it's just you're going to get some obnoxious kid or two or three or four at a game, whether it be basketball, baseball, whatever. Or are they going to see you out and they're going to scream something? We paying your salary. And it's like universities. Y'all are some of the smartest people in the world, but y'all act so damn dumb. Seriously. The more and more I think about this, it's like, y'all could have took care of this long time ago. But the arrogance and the greed and everything else, y'all didn't want to. Y'all is just some of the dumbest, smartest, dumbest people I've ever come across sometimes. It's like,
if you ever want to read, you can read the baseball equivalent in Lords of the Realm. Is a great history of the labor between the owners and the players, where the owners controlled everything so much and then just didn't figure out that if they had just set up a system that gave a couple of crumbs to the players over time, they could have kept control and paid a lot less, but instead they tried to hold on to total control. Then suddenly free agency happened, and the pendulum swung way back towards the players. I mean, it's like you said, D-Mace, it just was greed and dumb from the start and not forward-thinking at all. And so here's one thing that I always say, though. And I'm maybe the one guy shouting into the woods, right? I'm that voice in the woods. Anybody hear me? Is anybody going to class? Like, we're just getting started with this, right? We've got a new system now where now you have straight up professionals. Then now it's out in the open. It's not even conceptual. It's just happening. So does a kid have to go to class now?
Probably not. But
like, is it just totally optional? Hey, or is there still are there still NCAA tracking graduation? Wait, what's the thing that you have to do? You have to have
a certain amount of graduates,
or else you get penalized. Yeah. Like, does that mean anything now? Probably not.
Probably not, because there's so many transfers. You know, guys and girls are transferring in and out. It's just, again, I've never seen. Well, it baffles me that there are so many smart people in the room. They can't figure out a situation when they need to figure it out. They wait till it gets to, like, basically no point of return. Then they feel, oh, we got to do something now. Well, if y'all would have done something a long time ago, you wouldn't be in a position that you're in now. It's just, again, to me, it's just greed. Haven't they read their history? Those that are greedy, eventually empires fall because of greed and everything else. And the NCAA is systematically falling in the hands of the players.
615-737-1025. Your thoughts on the NCAA House settlement and the death of amateurism. We'll get into more of the winners and losers, I guess you could say, of this settlement. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingen, 1025, 106.3, The Game.
Back about 10 years ago when Mark Emmert, then the president of the NCAA, essentially said college athletes will be paid over my dead body. He's still alive, but the NCAA is dead. It may still be in existence. We're still having tournaments such as the Women's World Series and the men's baseball. But the NCAA, as we know it, is gone. They literally have no jurisdiction whatsoever other than to be tournament directors. And this was supposed to level the playing field. Everybody pays the same into the kitty and then divvies it up. But it will do anything but. The big will get bigger, and the small schools will simply slip away, other than maybe in basketball-only conferences that can use all that money for basketball, as opposed to like at Alabama and Georgia and Ohio State, where they have to split up $20.5 million.
That was Paul Feinbaum over the weekend talking about the NCAA House settlement. And I'm thinking about the quote-unquote winners and losers of this settlement. there's going to be a greater separation between the haves and the have-nots, as Paul Feinbaum said. The non-revenue sports, namely...
I disagree with that, by the way.
Which?
But we can talk about it. The
go
haves
right ahead.
And the have-nots.
Go
well,
for
I
it.
Think I said it in the last one. I think now, like, I remember baseball before revenue sharing, right? Hockey before salary cap. And it was ridiculous. That's what you had up until now. When baseball went to the revenue sharing and stopped short of a salary cap, it still was a huge advantage for the Yankees and the Dodgers and et cetera. There's a luxury tax, but as we've seen with my Mets, they've blown right through the luxury tax and just pay the luxury tax. But at least these teams have resources. Some don't use them, right? The Pirates and some teams. But all the small market teams now at least have enough to make something work. And that's what I think is different here with the NCAA. I sort of agree with Paul Feinbaum. He's very extreme with his take on the NCAA is dead.
They had to do something.
But they had to do something. And now we've got something. But it doesn't separate more. The haves are always going to outspend everybody. But I don't think there is a have not now, at least at the major level. I was worried that a year ago that Vanderbilt would be a have not and not be able to be anywhere close to competitive. They already made strides last year before this system, and I think this system now gives them a baseline where they're going to have enough to work with that if they're smart with it. If you're not smart with it, you're definitely going to be outspent and outplayed. But if you're smart with it and know what you're looking for with your talent evaluation and you're well coached, you can win.
This is not a have and a have not in regards to football. Football is always a majority. If we're talking to SEC and the Big Ten, let's just stick there. And part some ACC to an extent, but we know ACC does have they're rich. And, you know, when it comes to basketball, they have basketball teams. Big East, Adam and I were just talking about Big East. We know they are heavy.
Yes.
With basketball.
Think about UConn for a minute.
Providence.
Like UConn has a football program. Not a very good football program, but UConn has a football program. UConn, back to back recently, national champions in basketball. I imagine that most of their resources will go towards their basketball program. The SEC schools may not be able to spend as much on their basketball programs as UConn can spend on its basketball program because they also have to fund football teams.
Yeah, so no matter how good Alabama basketball team is, we know the bread is – we know which side of the bread is – you know, which side of the butter the bread is on. It's on the football side. So regardless if what – no matter what – Alabama basketball does. They've been great over the last couple of years, three, 4 years. They will never supersede football. So football will automatically get a bigger share of the pie. So to me, it's not about football per se. It's about the other sports that end up losing. It's about the smaller sports that may have to have their programs, you know, canceled or sliced in half. Because the majority of the money is going to football. So we're not talking about, Alabama's football team, you know, versus, you know, Vanderbilt's football team. No, because they got the same amount of money. Now, when you talk about outside the NIL, the 20.5, then okay, that's a different ball game. But inside the parameters, we all got the same money, and we're all able to divvy it up differently amongst our programs within our university. But the programs like the swim team or the track team.
The Olympic sports.
Yeah, the Olympic sports. Those are the sports. That's where the have and the have-nots are going to come.
Right, because they don't make money.
How does Title IX figure into this pot?
That's a good question.
That's over my pay grade, my pay grade.
But in principle, Title IX is still
intact,
alive and well.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how that works. There became a lot of new. How do you equate football that has 85 scholarships? Like, if you restrict Title IX, then you should have 85 scholarships for women's teams to offset the football.
But that was before any of these new rules.
But that wasn't exactly the case.
But that was before any of these new rules, Willie.
Right, so it's evolved a lot. Exactly. Right? So if you take a look, a lot of times there's a couple extra well-funded in terms of scholarships, Title IX. But now, in theory, if I think I read this right, Adam, the scholarship really isn't a thing anymore. It's just kind of booked it. It's kind of put
in. No,
into.
The scholarship is opposite. The scholarship is in addition to the money that the university will pay a college athlete. So,
but for example, you mentioned Olympic sports, but let's take baseball since that's front and center right now. For the longest time, I mean, there's websites called 11.7 because famously, baseball only has 11.7 scholarships for a roster that is 35 at minimum 35 people, and you know you can have as many as 50 people on your roster, but you have 11.7 scholarships. So there's a couple of things going on as it evolves. One, and I haven't heard the specifics of this. I probably need to read up on details, but I thought there were going to be roster limits.
Yeah, they are.
They go with this, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to knock down the number of players you can have. But also, is a baseball team now allowed to, or does it even matter? Is 11.7 still there, but it doesn't really matter because you can now, if you have the funds, take some of that and pay six other guys full rides if you want. I'm still trying to wrap my head around this.
One question I asked Derek during the break, Willie, and I'm not sure if this is exactly a fair question, but I was thinking about it. Let's use Vanderbilt, for instance. They can fund their football program. They can fund their basketball program. I'm wondering if there are any conversations within Vanderbilt's athletic department or any school, but we'll use Vanderbilt. Both of those programs, I would say, are on the rise, mm-hmm. football and basketball. Do you think there are conversations that will be had in schools similar to Vanderbilt where it looks like their football team and their basketball teams are, you know, they're both on the cusp of taking that next step? Do you think they wonder? I think our basketball program has a better chance to be successful this season than our football program. I think our basketball program can make it to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. Our football program, we might get to a bowl game, but not a college football playoff bowl game. I'm wondering if those conversations are had. Like, we think our basketball team has a better chance of winning this year than our football program. So we are going to allocate more resources to our basketball program than our football program.
I think every school probably has that conversation. And I think for the SEC, you have your SEC network money. You have your SEC general, you know, big check for all the teams that make it. You still have that, right? Mm-hmm. And now you have the revenue sharing. It's just a matter, I think, of taking all of what's coming in, all of your expenses, and then trying to figure out as best you can how to give fairly all of your teams a chance to succeed. But I do think there's going to be a lot of debate within each school, not just Vanderbilt, but hey, I got a great program over here, the tennis program. We're getting peanuts here. What about Title IX? All mm-hmm. of these things. There's going to be internal stuff, and I think around the country there will be a lot of, is anybody going outside the system and making innovative moves and bringing in so much money that it's a unfair advantage that they have. I think it's going to take a few years to settle all this.
I will be fascinated to see. I imagine maybe with the public universities, you may be able to get this data versus the private universities. But looking at how schools allocate their resources to their specific programs. Like, I'm going to go out on the limb here and say, I mean, Duke is a private institution, so you won't be able to get this information. But I have to imagine that most of Duke's war chest is going to its basketball program.
Heck yeah. Always has.
So I'm wondering for a team, you know, I'm wondering for like a middle-of-the-pack SEC football team. Like, let's use Auburn, for example. Like, Auburn has an historic football program. They've had plenty of success. You know, they're kind of
won a national title not too long ago.
They're kind of, would you say that they're kind of middle-of-the-pack in the SEC right now, football-wise?
I've always felt like Auburn is one of the more wide-ranging
right
They can win 10, 11 games.
They can be really good.
Three or four games.
Right. But look what their basketball program has been doing recently. Their basketball program has been knocking on the door. So I'm wondering, like, year over year, how that changes. Because right now, if I were Auburn, I would be putting more money into basketball because that program could win a national title.
Right. But I think there's going to be working with your collectives and with this money that's sort of straight up that's set aside through the revenue sharing. Right. I think that's going to be part of the answer. Because the collectives can probably do whatever they want. They don't have to do with Title IX. They're just saying, hey, we're a collective. We're private. We can do whatever we want.
Well, I mean, listen, it can eventually, there may be some animosity eventually. I predict animosity within the universities. And I think it's going to be public. Whereas I'm sure there's always been some type of animosity within because it's like I think my program needs more. You know, if we had more, we can do better. But the AD is saying, well, you need to do better. It was like, well, give me money and we can do better. So I'm sure there's some internal, you know, going back and forth. Now I think it can become really public now because now we know the money, we see the money. And we know exactly where it's going to be allocated. And we're going to know which programs are not getting the money that they probably want.
Didn't that happen at Kentucky with John Calipari?
Yes, it did a few years
ago. And Mark Stoops?
Happened a few years ago, I believe, if I'm not
mistaken. They publicly feuded, right? Because Calipari called the school a basketball school, and the football coach took umbrage with
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So I think there is the potential of it getting public, that some of these programs are feeling slighted. For instance, you go to South Carolina, I guarantee you the women's basketball team is going to be like, listen, no,
We get the money.
We need – where has the football team been in years?
Yeah.
They're going to be screaming to get that money, and rightfully so. So you're going to see there's going to be some effects of this whole new system going on. There's going to be some adverse effects, and they're not going to be good, and they're going to be public.
615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show next with our friend Jared Stillman. That's coming up next, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.
Home stretch here as we're about to wrap things up and hand the baton over to Jared Stillman. We will transition with Jared in just a moment, get his thoughts on the future of college sports with this new agreement, and maybe his thoughts on the college baseball weekend. We'll find out what he's got planned for his show. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here. Adam had to step out just a little bit early today. Speaking of Adam, let's get to a caller, Adam. I don't think this is Adam jumping in his car and calling the show, but Adam wanted to weigh in here on the landscape change with the new settlement, the $20 million, et cetera. Adam, what do you got?
Hey, fellas. Yeah, I think this is one of the most interesting stories of the year so far. Quick question, then I'll hang up and let y'all talk it out. My concern is, how is this not going to start a monopoly effect, if you will, from schools that mainly focus on one or two sports? I'm looking at Gonzaga for boys basketball, UConn boys and girls basketball. Now that they can officially outbid the professional teams. And I'll hang up and let y'all talk.
Well, I think I think some teams can opt out of it. Teams like Gonzaga that doesn't have a football team, or some of these lower mid-majors, Belmont, teams like that where they don't have the other programs, big programs that the SEC or the Big Ten or the ACC has. So I think they have until a certain day, and Jerry may know this better, to opt out of it. But once you opt in it, then you got to go by the guidelines that are set, the 20.5, you know, being a salary cap. So, but you also can opt out of it as well.
I think salary cap is going to end up being kind of a misnomer because, as you pointed out a couple times, D-Mace, you're going to have these other collectives for the richer schools that are going to be supplementing whatever they've got to do. So the salary cap, it's not going to be like the salary cap in the NHL, that's strict, and it's right on the point. You can't go over or else there are penalties. I mean, there are loopholes, as we found out, with the LTIR and all that stuff, but it is pretty strict. I just don't think this one's going to have that same effect. Let's see what Jared thinks. Let's bring in Jared Stillman. So, Jared, I still am trying to wrap my head around what all of this means. But what's your first thought of what the landscape's going to look like in a few years on college sports once this settles in?
So I would say the first thing, and I spent all weekend, you know, doing the college sports radio thing as this thing ended up going down. And I talked to two athletic directors, you know, off the record, and I said, all right, you know, kind of shoot me straight on some of this. I don't think this is going to affect any of us, you know, as far as how we root for sports or watch it. I think the big thing here is if everybody plays by the rules, which I wouldn't expect is going to happen, but let's just say it does and there's a $20 million cap. Well, now athletic directors have to decide, how do I want to use the $20 million? Mm-hmm. Now, the $600 clearinghouse, Deloitte, is going to be reviewing every NIL deal, you know, over $600. That way, in theory, if it's Johnny's tire market and Johnny is a big booster to Oklahoma, and he's paying you $200,000 to go to Oklahoma, that's apparently not going to be allowed. But if Wendy's wants you to be their Heisman, you know, campaign guy, that's legal, as long as it doesn't tell you, you know, pay for play for you to go to another school. I think that's kind of unconstitutional.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I think it's completely unconstitutional. I also think that, again, you know, all Deloitte can do is review the contract. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that they have to enforce the contract. We could say, like, yeah, Johnny's Tire Market, the NIL deal is for $599, and then write a check for $599,000, you know, and who's going to know one way or another? So I don't think that that's really going to stand up. But as far as the one thing I found fascinating about this is you're an athletic director. You're the University of Tennessee. Because let's think about it like this. Let's say it's $20 million. How much money is there for Tony Vitello at the end of the day? Because we know football's got to eat first.
Yes.
Now you're going to take food off Rick Barnes' plate? So right. Now Vanderbilt
might
be in a different...
What about Title IX, Jared? I had that thought, and I guess, has that been discussed? Did you guys hit that point?
I feel like with Title IX, we just have decided to completely ignore it. Because for... I remember with Johnny Manziel... When Johnny Manziel was signing autographs at A&M, I was on the radio in Louisville. And so this was like July, and there's nothing going on, and it's a college town. So that kind of raised the whole, well, should they pay the players discussion. And the whole thing was, if you pay the players, you have to pay the women's players equally because of Title IX. But I haven't heard anybody mention that, you know, in the last year or so. So I guess we just are going to pretend that doesn't exist. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you guys on that one. I'm with you, Willie. I have no idea how this is legal with Title IX. I also have no idea how this is legal to cap the money that they're going to pay the athletes when the athletes haven't been represented collectively. I don't understand.
Yeah, that is what's baffling me, that they're making decisions for both parties with only one party in a room. And they set up these guidelines of a salary cap, and then you set up and say, well, we're going to monitor how much a guy or girl can make, how much are these other people, collectives, are paying, these boosters are paying. And if we think that it's too much, what are we going to do? They didn't say what they were going to do. They just said they got people overseeing it.
Okay, yeah. Let's here's another one for you, Jared, because supposedly there is some transparency now where you have to register. Like if I got to deal with D-Mace, and so I got to put D-Mace on the central website that says, here are the NIL deals. I got Mason, $500K. But what's to keep me from, I put him at $500K, but I'm actually getting him an extra $200,000 on the side that I'm not putting up there. You know what I mean? Like, this is going to,
sure.
I feel like these games are going to be played. This is an SEC tradition, for crying out loud, is to get around the rules, right?
What I think is hilarious about that, to your point, Willie, is, you know, I almost want us to kind of have a moment of truth now where everybody can put everything on the table and just say, like, yeah, we paid this guy and we paid that guy. I mean, I remember I was flying on a plane one time with a basketball coach who told me, and this was pre-NIL and everything else, and he told me, he said, look, he goes, the idea that we shouldn't pay players is crazy. I mean, it's not against the law to pay college players. This was before the FBI got involved for that one minuscule period. But he said it's not like it's against the law to pay college players. Secondly, if I'm making $3 million as a basketball coach and I've got 1 year left on my deal and I can pay that guy $250,000, he gets me to the Sweet 16 and I get a contract extension, why would I not pay the $250,000? And so coaches have been doing this forever, where it's like, hey, you know, the university's paying me $4 million and I'm paying you $150,000. That is not something that is new. So to your point, Willie, I don't know how you enforce this. And I heard you guys run the Paul Feinbaum cut earlier today, where Feinbaum was saying, you know, the NCAA is just putting on tournaments and there's really no enforcement of rules anymore with the NCAA. And I'll ask you guys this question. When's the last time we talked about a player going to class?
We haven't.
Well, did I not bring that up?
Yeah, you brought it up, but we haven't.
Like, I mean, at this point, really, why would anybody need or want to go to class if you're in this if you're in a position where you're getting substantial money? And even the coaches and the university would have a hard time. Can you become academically ineligible?
Well, you still can.
Like, I'm sure if you want to go to class and you can work it around your schedule of all of the obligations, like. Yeah, basically, you got to be there 12 months a year now. If you're a football player, you don't get to come home.
Well, I'm sure. I'm sure they have some type of, you know, something within their ruling that says, okay, yeah, we got 20.5, and yeah, we're going to give majority of it to the football team. But if you're not going to class, if you're not doing these things, then yeah, you get deducted. So it's not like it's just a free for all. You don't have to go to class. I'm sure there are some stipulations put in there to say, hey, if you ain't going to class, we ain't paying you the money. At least they should have that in there. Let's say that.
I mean, I'll say this. I was told over the weekend that Shedeur Sanders never once went to class at Colorado. All of his classes were online. So how many, you know, was Shedeur cracking open the laptop and getting to where? I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But
I don't understand the concept of the online classes. That's been going on. Remember, Johnny Manziel was the first I heard. He was like, hey, I'm too stressed out. It's too big of a deal. I got to go online. And I would have to imagine, Jared, that there might be some guys and gals who can do online stuff and still do hard work. I would imagine there's others that are completely checked out. It's done for them. And it just makes it a lot easier to get around actually learning material and advancing
your
brain.
Is the statute – I graduated in 2012. Is the mm-hmm. statute of limitations on integrity and my degree, is that up? Like, if I were to share something on the air, would I lose my degree retroactively?
I don't think they could.
I don't think they could take it back from you.
I think they could take it back, can't they? They're the ones that gave it to me.
I mean, in theory, but would they take the time and energy and resources to come do it? I mean, that would be spectacular for ratings, Jared. Like, Jared gets his degree stripped
so what,
back.
So what would get your degree stripped away from you? Or you'd rather not say.
I'm not saying I did anything one way or another. I'll put you like this. Willie's talking about Johnny Manziel was the first year to online classes, and Manziel won the Heisman in 2012. Mm-hmm. I mean, I graduated before Manziel even got to college or before he even started playing in college, and I took online classes every year at Louisville. So,
okay.
I will tell you, the integrity of the online classes, I do not believe is very high. I'll just put it to you like that.
I hear it. All right, Jared, before we let you run, speaking of Louisville, I know we got to run here, but congratulations to your Cardinals for advancing to Omaha. And so I'm sure you'll be mentioning that a couple times on your show.
I mean, I wasn't planning on making a big deal about it. I'm very, very happy for Louisville. I will be going to Omaha if they make it to the College World Series final. I it's just such a long trip. It's like you either pick to go on the front end or the back end. I'll go on the back end.
Yeah.
If they make it there, which is obviously no guarantee, but man, it was a lot of fun college baseball to watch over the weekend. That is for sure.
All right, Jared, have a good show, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Oh, here's a question I got to ask for you too.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Oh boy,
who's the better program, baseball, Vandy or Tennessee?
Right, see, we're going to ask you that. Yeah,
you know what I'm going to say. You know what I'm going to say,
Derek.
I'm Vandy. Vandy's the better program.
20 plus years
overall. Vandy's
20
better
plus
program.
Years of building and sustaining greatness.
Yeah.
So if you look, I look at it that way. Tennessee is new to the party. They're red hot. They've been outstanding, but they haven't done it nearly as long.
UT is
so
new money.
Clearly.
UT is new money. Vandy's old money. So there you go. That's how we do it. So see you
all
later.
Right, Jared, well, have fun.
Give
we
it to us, Derek.
To you. And D Mace, I will talk to you tomorrow, and we'll get Adam Vingan back, and DVD will roll on.
Absolutely. So be love, love on your people. Have a blessed, safe, wonderful, and stay dry, people, because there are a lot of storms out there. Have a wonderful Monday. Peace.